I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of...
Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Mostly Lit. How's everybody doing today?
How you doing, Alex?
I'm good. We're down a voice today because Ray's been held up with some work stuff.
Yeah, so we the volume today is going to be reduced.
We are reducing the volume today. But yes, we're still here, Derek and I. Hopefully you guys all had a good week. How has your week been as well?
My week's been dramatic. It's been a rough week, I won't even lie. Like, this week I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, as well as the depression. Yeah. So I was kind of like, wow, okay, this is cool, you know? but it's funny because when I was, you know, talking to the mental health specialist and my GP, and they were kind of going through everything that the people with borderline personality disorder display.
Yeah.
It was like I was reading a horoscope or something. Like my start, it was so weird. And I was just thought, wow, I really just thought like I was just a weird you. Like, or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's strange because I think the one that really got me was the kind of excessive spending, and you have like this impulse to just do a reckless spend. And I thought, I don't do that. And then I thought, hold on a minute. I've got like 100 perfumes at my house that I just go and buy on a whim. Do you know what I mean? And put myself in a shit. I've got to eat like beans on toast for the next couple of weeks because I ain't got no money. But yeah, so that was eventful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really think like when I was at the hospital, I think they were going to try and section me or something. Do you know what I mean? Not because I was moving mad, but because when I came in, and what I'd done to myself, they were kind of just like, two guys walked in, they were mental health specialists. They were just kind of like, we've never ever seen a black man come through here who does this.
Yeah.
The guy was like, I've been doing this for 10 years. He's like, I've never seen a black man come through. He's like, I'm not saying they don't do it, but he's just like, I've never seen
it's
it.
Unheard of.
And it just made me think like, raw, like, I mean, personally, that just must mean they're really, really suffering in silence.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because I personally don't know of a black guy who self-harms or anything like that. I've never met one. I don't know if you have, you might have.
There might have been somebody. I mean, when I was at school, there were a few people who self-harmed.
Black guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, is it?
I can't really remember.
In what way did they self-harm?
It was the lighters.
Ah.
And some of them self-harmed, obviously with the slit in their forearms and their wrists and whatnot.
Yeah.
A lot of women did it.
Yeah. Black women?
Mixed race.
Really?
Yeah, but...
Where did you go to school? Northwest?
Yeah, Northwest.
Ah, stressful area.
Well, I don't know. I think it was just it was just one of them spaces. Everybody was like going through shit.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Everybody was going through shit, and you know, everybody was trying to like, you know, therapy wasn't something that anybody had heard of, anything, heard of to do, or felt like it was something that they needed. So, yeah, difficult times, difficult places, and everybody grows up in their shit.
So this
is what we've got to deal with. You see what I mean?
Mm.
But, you know, now you know.
It's a tough one for me because I really, it makes me feel a bit sick because I'm a control freak and I want accountability for everything I do, every decision I make. So when someone's saying, oh, your behavior's been influenced by this or that, it makes me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? But yeah, you know, shit happens. You know,
it is what it is,
man. Do you know what I mean? I'm being this open about it because I just feel like, why should I be ashamed? Why should I be embarrassed? Why should I, you know, and not talk about it?
It's not something to be ashamed about.
Of course,
it's just
figuring
out how to manage it now.
Yeah, and especially when I heard the thing about, you know, black men, it just really made me think these guys are just suffering in silence. They have to be, you know. So if I'm talking about openly, perhaps somebody else might then start talking about openly, and then we can get our shit together.
We can heal together, you know?
But anyway, that's been my week. How's your week been, Alex?
I mean, on lighter notes, I guess. My week's been pretty cool, to be honest.
Mm.
You know, hearing the news and then also writing and working on my own projects.
What news?
What you just told me.
Oh, right, okay.
And then, working on my own projects and just trying to figure out, like, where that fits and, you know, just things that I'm doing. I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to get it all done. You know, it always seems to be up against the clock for some reason, which I'm really trying to just simplify my life, like, at the end of the day. So I'm not on certain social media platforms. I'm literally just peaceful. I'm peaceful. Like, I find myself actually going through my phone because I deleted the app. Actually, just find myself going through my phone. I'm just like, oh my God, like, let's see, where's the, like, you know, when you have the certain apps you go to, like, habitually.
Yeah.
And I go to the app and it says, and it's like, I went to the app for like the first few days and it was logged out. And I was like, oh, and then, so it just meant that I wasn't going to log back in.
Right.
Kind of thing. But yeah, man, I'm out here working. I'm trying to keep my mind right.
That's good, man.
I'm working. Next stage is getting my body right, and then, you know, everything's just gonna have to
fall. Living your best life.
Well, yeah, everything's just gonna have to fall into place, into the way it has to go.
Mm.
And but yeah, it's been a relatively good week. I went to the Fourth Estate Guardian BAME short story prize. That's such a long title.
Right.
I think that might need to change. But yeah, I went there. And it was an amazing night. Like, just shout out to everybody that came and all the winner. I was just there chilling. Yeah, I think that those kind of short story awards are so important.
Of course.
To kind of get people into writing.
Fam, look, guy Gunnar Rodney, bruv. He's now, you know, long listed for the Man Booker, and he wrote for them, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was
sick.
Yeah,
bro.
He was shortlisted, or was he long listed?
Shortlisted.
He was shortlisted.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like, so many people have started their careers based on that prize, so it was pretty good. So yeah, it was really good.
Cool.
Yeah.
What are you reading, Alex?
What am I reading?
If you are reading anything,
I'm reading a lot of books this week. So we're reading a book for the live show, which is happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
So if you're there, you're there, you'll know the book. But I'm also reading the Death of Noel Glass by someone called Gail Jones, which is,
I know Gail Jones,
yeah, an Australian author. It's quite an interesting book. An art historian, like, dies in Italy.
Of course.
dies in Italy, and his children in Australia, you know, and his children in Australia have to go, like, try to go to find out what caused his death, because it's become part of an investigation. Something was stolen from a museum, and obviously it coincides with Noah's death. So, yeah, his kids, fully adult kids, like, are on their way to try and find out what happened, and they have to go to Italy and figure it out.
So it's like a murder mystery.
Yeah, but it's quite an interesting take, because it's not a book that I'd usually pick up. off my own choice anyway, but it's not a book that I usually pick up. And, you know, set in Australia, like, for some reason, I'm just not drawn to those kind of books.
Books set in Australia.
I've not picked up any books that are.
I mean, is that
set
something you look for on
no,
Blurb?
No, but when I thought about it, I'm like, I've never picked up a book that has anything that's been set in Australia.
Yeah, I mean,
before.
But okay, I mean, I get it. It's
like,
just
I find that just really, like, you know, really, really odd.
Why? Why is that?
I don't know. Like, when I looked at the blurb and I was like, oh, okay. Cool. They're in Australia. I don't know. I find it weird.
I don't think I've read a book set in Australia either, actually.
Yeah, but it was interesting because they're talking about they're in Sydney and Perth and, like, Melbourne, and it's between those three cities.
Mm.
And then they talk about, like, the Aboriginals and the, like, and all of that stuff, and how his dad, like, Noah's dad, was a medical missionary of some kind. I don't know. It was really interesting.
I'm like, it sounds a bit dead to me.
I mean, it's interesting to a point. But anyway, so also reading a book by a woman called Merv Emery. She's got a book called What's Your Type? And she's basically found out the history of the Myers-Briggs.
The
Myers-Briggs personality testing.
Yeah.
She's going through it just to see how much of it is actually used in business and used in people's interpersonal relationships, and what the impacts of such are. And she's just, you know, trying to create a case for it, if there is one,
okay,
to be had.
That sounds interesting.
That was really good. That's been a good book. That's been a good read.
Cool.
I know there's something about, like, nonfiction essays that just helped me just to, like, breeze through as if reading a documentary.
It's
or
nice,
something.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hear that still.
What are you reading? You're an idiot. You're actually an idiot.
I'm reading, I started reading Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote. And I have to say, I don't like it. He's a good writer. He can write well. I just don't, there's little things that I'm just like, do you have to be this racist? Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's
really annoying. So he talks about how Holly Golightly, she's in Africa. And the way he describes the African is just like, oh, the primitive being or whatever. And there's a part where the guy's basically saying, oh, Holly Golightly took a liking to one of the natives. And then the bartender's like, oh, I don't think she would go that far. Like, as if they say, what, dealing with a black man, is it? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just bare racist stuff in the book. So it's making me shudder a bit, but I've got to keep going. I've got to finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll finish it. But don't like Holly Golightly. She's just really annoying. I don't understand what the fascination is with her. People think that she's...
I don't know. I've not even seen the film, so I wouldn't even know.
I haven't seen the film either.
I just...
Yeah.
Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so that's what I've been reading, and obviously the book for the live show tomorrow, but that's it.
Cool. Main topic, we've got...
it's a poetry episode.
It's a poetry episode. Today. We have two poems that have been picked by Sir Derek.
Yep.
Of wherever he's from. And we... Do you want to introduce the poems, Derek?
Because yeah, sure, like, sure.
These poems reek of you.
Really, anyway.
They do. They're like old and archaic. And it's something that you would read in GCSE English.
Yeah, I think they do read them in GCSE
English.
But I mean, what's the problem here?
It just reminds me of...
What?
Those days. Sorry, go on.
Anyway, the first poem we're doing is called Ozymandias by Percy Bysshe Shelley. And yeah, this is one of my favorite poems. I've even got it tattooed on my arm. That's how much I love it.
Like, you got everything tattooed on your
arm. I do have everything tattooed on my arms. but yeah, it's just, I mean, can I recite it?
If you want to recite
if
it, I mean,
recite it from memory.
I don't. All right, go on.
Okay. I met a traveller from an antique land.
Wrong.
Huh? What? How's it wrong?
It's right.
You're so annoying. anyway.
I met a traveller from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that his sculptor well those passions red which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them and the heart that fed, And on the pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing besides remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, alone in level sand stretched far away.
Was that right? Yeah, boy.
You got a word wrong.
What word did I get wrong?
That's for you to find out.
All right, whatever.
Nah, I'm joking. It's really good. It's really good.
I love that poem.
There are some poems that really stick with you, right?
That one really stuck with me. It really...
It reminds me because my English teacher used to make us do poetry tests. So we had to remember passages and poems. So that's kind of what... That was a throwback.
Mm.
It was a throwback.
So what do you think of it?
I mean...
First impressions.
I remember reading this before.
Oh, you read it before.
And
okay.
I think, and I was thinking like, there's nothing much that I don't know much. I remember reading it. I'm like, I talk to me about the poem. I'm not. Nothing grabbed me.
So, what do you think the poem's about?
Just a man. I think on the surface, a man.
Yes, a man
that has gone to an antique land.
Yes,
and you know he's seen this amazing statue, this amazing feat, mm-hmm. this amazing building, and he's thinking, "I'm not worthy of this grand." Thing. Therefore, who am I? Who am I?
No, Alex.
That's what it feels like. That's what it feels like. I mean, there's nothing like it's been to tell me about the poem. I'm not really. This poem didn't really jump out at me. The next one.
I thought that you would really, really like this one.
No, because it doesn't. It's just go on. What do you think?
I mean, my interpretation of it is like the ephemeral nature of everything. So kind of like, I don't know if that's the right word. I can't remember. I don't know. But like, yeah, the transitory nature of everything. Nothing lasts forever. You can try your best to leave a mark on the world. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to remember you.
But where does that, like, if we're looking at the poem and we're dissecting the poem, where do you get that from? Because you're looking at it, you're looking at this image that is created. If you're reading it and you're breaking it down,
yes,
where is that?
Okay. When he's talking about the statue, how it used to look, and the words, my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. And then nothing besides remains. Around the decay and that colossal wreck, alone and level sand stretched far away.
Yeah, so
basically means, yes, once you had a great empire, you thought that you were the King of Kings. You were like a god among men. Look how you treated people, you know, sneer and wrinkled lip and, you know, sneer of cold command or whatever. Yeah. And now there's nothing, just sand blowing away.
And that's why
your shattered visage is in the sand.
And that's why I mentioned that it kind of like shows how small you are.
Yes,
in comparison
absolutely.
To the world. This is what I'm saying. Like, you can be that's what it showed to me. Do you see what I mean? Like, obviously, it said, obviously, I am my name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Obviously, that's a derelict site.
Yeah.
All of these. So you're saying that it shows you the temporariness of the world and the kind of
and the futility of trying to leave a mark.
No, I don't think there's a futility in that. But I think it's like the futility of landmarks of so for example in London we have Nelson's Column and all of these great war victories and whatnot, but another person that has come from another land can come and look at Nelson's Column and not feel anything,
right?
Like we live in London and we're no historians, we're no history buffs, we know Nelson's Column, we see it wherever, you know, we go to Trafalgar Square, we see are there four lions in Trafalgar Square? Or is it, there are several lions in Trafalgar Square. Yeah. Nobody knows what they're there for.
But you can still marvel at it.
But you just be like, well, they're lions.
But you know that it's Lord Nelson. Is it Lord Nelson? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Standing on top of the column, you know that's who it is.
Yeah, but like, that's the thing. But
and you can marvel at it.
But he's not there. And it's like, and if you don't know who he is, you don't care. It's just this, it's just a statue.
But even if you don't care, you can still marvel at the statue. Do you know what I mean? It's still something to behold.
Yeah, and it won't last.
No, it won't last. Of course it won't.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that it doesn't even matter if it means nothing to you. Mm. You can still marvel at it. Like, wow, this is amazing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the futility of that, like... And it's just... I think the classical interpretation of the poem is just like... It's about hubris and about pride, the fall coming before pride, you know.
Yeah. So what do you think Ozymandias was like?
An arsehole, wasn't he? I mean, it's clear that he was lording over people.
Yeah.
Ruling with an iron fist.
But the thing is, if you like...
I think it's based on a real pharaoh, I think, or king. I can't remember what his name was. Apparently, there was a exhibition in a museum at the time, and then Percy Bysshe Shelley wrote the poem. Somebody else wrote another poem as well, along the similar theme. I can't remember who it was. Oh, my God, I learned all of this, and I'm now forgotten. But, yes.
But then who's the... But who... Okay, so if we're reading the poem, then who is the... So he's saying, look on my works, ye mighty and despair.
Yeah.
Now, whose works? Is it the sculptor's work or...
No, it's Ozymandias' works.
So the Ozymandias' works. Yeah. Now, if you're a king and you've been lording it over so many people for so long, what works? What works?
But they take...
Because is it not the work of the sculptor that is being lorded over?
Do you think anybody remembers one of the names of the many, many slaves who died putting the Great Pyramid of Giza together? No, but they remember the pharaoh. Who was pharaoh at the time of it being built.
Okay.
Kings take responsibility for these marvels, these things.
Mm.
Queens, you know, Cleopatra's Needle. People don't care who came up with the blueprints for it. Do you understand?
But then again, like, so in this situation now, but Ozymandias is still there.
That's true.
In a comparison, like, I mean, I'm looking at it now, I'm just thinking he's actually still there now. Because
but he's not going to be there for much longer.
He's not going to be there for much longer, but he's still there. People still marvel at his feet, like his trunkless legs of stone. People still marvel at that.
That's a good point. Actually.
That's the same thing. And the same thing, like Nelson is not there.
Mm-hmm.
People still marvel at this work.
But that's why they build these things. That's why they put them together. But I think the point is that you can do all of these things, try your hardest to leave a mark, but at the end of the day, the last person who remembers you will eventually die. The last monument on which your name is etched will fade away.
Yeah. Have you seen a Disney film called Coco?
Nah.
You've not seen it?
I've never even heard of it.
Not seen it. You need to watch Coco. Yeah. But basically, it's a... is it Disney? Or is it Pixar? Not Pixar, sorry. Is it Dixie or DreamWorks?
Coco. What's it about?
So basically, it's like this kid and he's in a... It's really cool. Like, he's in this Mexican family. And you know, like, they've got the Dia de los Muertos. So, like, they've got the day where the dead can come back to the earth, to come back to the living.
Before you just throw some Spanish on it.
Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah,
and, yeah, so he's like, oh, so each year their family, like they, you know, they have the rose petals, and it's like the fact that the ancestors can come back to the living and just be around them, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
But they have to have their family's portraits up.
Right.
And something happened in, because it will give away the story, but something happened in their family where the grandmother became widowed and she, or like a divorcee or whatever, and she didn't know where her husband was, the great-great-grandmother. So throughout the generations, and he was a musician. So since he left, they all decided that no music was going to happen in the family at all. Long story short, one of the boys ends up going to the land of the dead and tries to find his relative to bring him back. But there's this narrative in the story where once you are forgotten...
Yeah.
By those that are living, you no longer exist in the afterlife. To come back to, like, do you know what I mean? Like, so your presence in the afterlife is only as...
It's maintained by the living.
Yeah, it's maintained by the living.
That's interesting.
And like, if your photo is not up on the mantelpiece on the day of the dead, the ancestors, the spirits can't come back. It's like a passport. Like the way they've like pictured it on the film is that it's like a passport thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, oh, your picture's up, you can go through. It's not up, you can't leave, kind of thing.
Coco.
It's called Coco.
I actually want to watch that.
Watch it. Like, I watched it twice. I watched it back to back.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just brilliant. Obviously, it's a kids' film as well. So it's a lot of music.
Yeah,
stuff, but it's great, and it's set in Mexico, but.
Okay.
That's kind of that, like, you know, your presence is only survived by the living, in a sense. And it was an interesting way to look at the dead, like, you know, so you've got all your ancestors, you've got all your grandparents or your parents, whatever, whoever's passed away, they survive via your memory. And there's an instance in the film where there was one person and he was disappearing because the oldest living person that can remember him was losing her memory and dying.
So that makes me now think, once the last person who remembers you dies, once any mark you've made in this world has vanished, can anybody even say that you ever existed in the first place?
Now, that's the thing. Someone like, for example, Shakespeare, for example, he would forever continue, for longer than most people, because his works carry him. And it's like celebrities, they tend to have a lot more in the afterlife. In this context, in this story, they tend to have a lot more in the afterlife because they are remembered.
So many people.
Like, they've got pictures of them everywhere. There's music of them. There's their plays. There's their writings. There's all these different things. And there's so many writers and musicians or just general people who would just be erased into nothingness.
That's kind of really interesting.
And it was an interesting philosophy. So... yeah.
I know, it's like, you know, I don't know if you've read a poem called We Are Seven by William Wordsworth.
No.
And it's about this, I think I've spoken about this before, it's about, I think it's a little girl and a man is asking, oh, how many brothers and sisters do you have? And she's like, we are seven. And he's like, okay, tell me about them. And she says, oh, one of them is buried in a grave. And he's like, oh, so there's six of you. And she's like, no, we're seven.
I've heard of this, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, no, there's seven of us. And he's like, okay, but this one's dead. And the child kind of like can't really understand what he's trying to say. And it always makes me think that, at what point do you actually say, I don't have a brother anymore if your brother has died? Because you do have a brother, he's just dead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like in Good Will Hunting when, it's a little bit different, but in Good Will Hunting when Will was talking to a therapist and he's like, you know, you should go out and meet somebody new. And his therapist is just like, my wife is dead. And then he's like, yeah, so that's why you should
go meet. Out
and he's like, no, my wife is dead. So he's essentially saying, I still have a wife, she's just dead. Mm-hmm. I'm still married, my wife's just dead. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just really makes me think about our position and then to get all, you know, fancy philosophical and stuff, but it, just the how we exist in the world as well.
Mm.
At what point do we say we exist? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's hard to explain. It makes me think of like idealism and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Idealism. Exactly. Just like that. So the idea that someone has to be looking at you in order for you to exist. Do you know what I mean? So people have to, if people remember you or thinking of you, then you still exist in some way, shape or form, just like in that movie.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. And
Sorry, I just went off.
It's fine. Because now we've got Ozymandias, who's there, and people are still talking about him, even though he was, you know, as they say, he was a horrible man, and is it only his a half sunk, shattered visage lies, and all that stuff. But people still marvel at that, and I just find that really.
But he's halfway to obscurity. He'll be there soon.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we're there soon.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why I always found it weird, right? So I've always had this thing about graveyards.
Okay.
All right. So
is this going to get weird?
No.
Okay.
Why would it get weird?
I mean, some people do weird things in graveyards,
Alex.
I mean,
they're quiet, they're peaceful places.
Okay.
So, anyway.
All right.
So what it is like, when you go to a graveyard, right? And like, you know, it's something that I find really strange that there's a place where people are buried with a headstone and with certain dates on it. And, you know, there's going to be a point where the family are no longer going to be available to come and visit those graves.
Right.
So when you go and see like these graves are like of like a slanted, proper slanted, and they're old, and it's like, such and such from 1790 thing to 18, whenever. And you're like, all right, what do you do with these graves now? Like, what was the purpose of having these graves?
So what should they do with the bodies? Put them in a blender or something?
I don't know, man. I told you, I'm big on cremation.
Okay.
I'm big on, like, I'd rather there be a place that, you know, even if it was like a forest, even if you planted a tree, I don't know. I just feel like I'm big on.
But the bodies dissolve. It's like you're to the dust we shall return. We literally are fed back into the earth, and but then we become oil.
Then it becomes an economic issue because then you're like, coffins are expensive, and so are headstones. So
good grief. So we should just. Can I ask you a question?
I'm not trying to like be insensitive to the situation, but like the people need to. Like, I just feel like I'm thinking in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Can I ask you a stupid question? You know, cremation? Is it literally
fire?
They they burn you into ash.
Yeah.
Is it literally that?
Yeah. Literally, they put you in.
Yeah.
They crank it up.
Yeah. And whew. So that ash that people bring home in urns or whatever.
It's the people.
That's actually my brains, my heart, my liver, my lungs, bones, everything, teeth.
Everything.
Into dust.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off. No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's fucking not.
It's at very least, it's your bones. And the suit you're wearing.
Maybe the bones. Yeah, I don't...
I mean...
How the hell is that... Fuck off, Alex.
I'm
going to Google this now because I just had to... I'm going to Google this one.
Actually have a look. But I find graveyards really strange because I feel like they're hallowed places. But yeah. Then it's like, well, what is there now?
Yeah.
Because I just find it weird.
Right, okay.
But then and they will just end up people going off into obscurity, like... You know, people and the people that are supposed to go and visit them will just die too.
Mm.
And they're just like plots and plots of places. And what I found out as well, you know, like around Euston,
yeah,
where around the station, around those green areas that they're building on now and stuff, they used to be like graveyards.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
They kind of.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care. A leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Like, had to dig it up and, you know.
But what are we supposed to do, bro? Just leave the place, like, let's build on top. Anyway.
for real, bro. you think to yourself, like, you know, the population's growing. Mm. Therefore, does it make sense to have a graveyard? Does it make sense to have a burial? I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting.
So when cremation.
Anyway, yes. So that was Ozymandias. Glad you liked it, though. I thought he was going to hate it. If Ray was here, she'll probably be like, she hates it.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so what's the second poem, Alex?
So the second poem is by a man called John Donne, mm-hmm. and it's called No Man Is an Island.
No, that's not what it's called.
Can you let me finish?
Go on.
It's well known as No Man Is an Island, uh-huh. from Meditation 17. Part of Meditation 17.
Yeah, like a little chunk.
Let me read it. So, no man is an island, entire of himself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less. As well as if a man of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never sent to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee.
Mm. I mean, you butchered it a little bit.
There's bare, like, I mean, it's the first time I'm reading it. First time I'm reading it aloud.
Okay,
to be
right.
Honest, yeah. So I could see that you were just thinking he's just ruining.
He's ruining it.
Sacred text. He's ruining it. I could just see you in the corner of my eye. But you know what? We move forward and we continue. And I own that I butchered half of it. Hmm. But at the same time, there are so many things coined from this poem into popular culture.
Yeah.
No Man Is an Island. Whom the bell tolls,
yeah,
you know, it tolls for thee, etc. But anyway, what do you think about this?
I love this poem. I was going to get this tattooed on me as well.
It's a poem about loneliness, right?
I think it's a poem about the universal connection between mankind and everything. Like, so it's like if one of us dies, then someone else. Like, not if one of us dies. If you die, I die. Basically, do you know what I mean? If something happens to you, it happens to me too. Do you know what I mean? you know, no man is an island. We're all connected. We're all part of the world and blah, blah, blah. So therefore, and I heard this from Maya Angelou, actually. She basically said that back in the day when somebody died, they would toll the bell, they'll ring the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will be like, oh, who's dead? Who's the bell tolling for? And that's why he says, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee, which means one person has died. We've all died. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think that's the kind of classical interpretation of the poem. And that's what I get from it. It's interesting. It used to make me think about the responsibility that we have for each other. Whether we actually have a responsibility for each other. Are we this, you know, mankind where we all love each other and, you know, we all respect our neighbors.
Why did it make you think that? Why did it make you feel that, of all things?
Because
responsibility for one another. Hold on, let me read this poem again.
Yeah, responsibility for one another.
I mean, why?
Huh?
Why?
Because there's lines in it that allude to that.
So no man is an island entire of itself.
Yeah.
Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main.
If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less.
Okay, what does that mean?
Basically, if
a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less.
Yeah, so if one of us goes,
then
mankind has been diminished.
The human race has been diminished.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Do you know what I mean?
Cool.
Yeah, and it just made me feel, because obviously you think about, okay, if we're all connected, we have responsibility for each other. Then I thought, do we have responsibility for each other? How much, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, if you see somebody, like yesterday I was sitting on the train and there was a woman opposite me and she was really crying. And everybody was kind of like just pretending they didn't notice. One, because they were just like, it's not my business.
Mm.
Or, you know, I have no idea why she's crying. You know, it might not even be that serious or it might be too serious. I was just looking at her. I was in my black mode. So I was literally just staring at her like, But do you know what I mean? But there was a nice lady next to her. She took out some Kleenex and she gave her some tissues. I feel like that's probably enough in London anyway.
Yeah.
In polite British society, just offering a tissue is basically me saying, you know, I feel your pain. I'm sorry that you're crying.
So, I had this kind of conversation with my friend this week, and we were talking about that, and it was interesting because I was like, he saw something happen. He saw something going on with somebody like in the street. And I was like, and he was like, oh, is that person okay? Like, I want to say something, I want to do something. And I'm like, my friend, like, this is London.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You are like, for your own personal safety, you need to actually like assess the situation and figure out whether it is your own, whether it's your business or not to step into these things. Too many and too often a time do we see people step in to like be like, oh, what's going on, and then they get themselves caught up in the shaggery of somebody else's problem.
True.
And I was just like, you know, there's this, as you said, there's that responsibility for one another, that you know, like handing someone a tissue, like I don't know whether I would have done that, because I feel like sometimes am I just intruding in someone's space like that?
I get that.
And then, I do sometimes feel like, well, was there also a choice for you to stand, to get on the train and cry on the train rather than crying on the platform? What happened with, like, what was going through your mind to make, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes.
Alex, why are you thinking like that?
I'm just like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking, what is it? I know that personally, if I was going through that stuff, I'd make sure that I'd have to just like try to contain myself.
She was crying. I could tell she was crying. She'd stop, she'd breathe, and then you could just see her face scrunching up, like it's coming back. The memory of whatever it is that's happened is coming back. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
And it's hard. It's hard to discern. But then when we're living in a world where so many people's lives are taken for less, for such little and petty things, or end up getting caught. You don't know, man. And you see all these things that happen to people, you know, they talk to somebody, you know, who's going through something like that, and then they get a stalker.
Yeah.
Or they intervene in a situation, you know, trying to protect somebody else. But you don't know the full story, you're just thinking of trying to protect someone, and then they end up being harmed.
Look, Alex, I know you're Mr. Like, mind my business. I get it, but... Sometimes, like, you right now, you sound really cold-blooded.
No, it's not even cold.
Like, you know what I mean, bro?
But, like, it's not cold-blooded. Like, it's not about being cold-blooded, because my heart does go out to a lot of people a lot of the times. But at the same time, I have to make sure that I've got to know that what I'm getting myself into is.
So you think about yourself first.
But you have to. You do have to, because if you like, especially in a city as turbulent as London, or in any of these situations, a lot of people, you put yourself into these people's spaces and into their shoes and whatnot a lot of the time, where you step into these situations. Oh yeah, stop this, that, and the other, and then you end up becoming the victim.
I get it, yeah, but something
so
like
that, you do have to be careful, because there's million people in the city, you know.
But no one's telling you to run out and be Superman or whatever. But just handing someone a tissue,
yeah,
that's a nice gesture. Like, even after I saw that, my first thought was I need to start carrying tissues in my bag in case I run into someone crying on the train.
I mean, like, obviously, yeah, if someone has the resources, you know, and it doesn't harm the other, like you know, and it's not harming anybody.
Exactly.
I mean, that makes sense to do so.
I'm not saying go out and put yourself in danger, but when I say personal responsibility for each other, maybe just like, yeah, if you see, like, whenever I see somebody struggling up the stairs with suitcases and stuff, whether it's a man or a woman, I always just be like, do you want a hand, mate? Like, can I help you? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I really try and do that. Or if you see somebody's like.
Why do you do that?
Because they clearly need some help. So I have a free hand. Why don't I give you it? Do you know what I mean? Like, well, you just mind your business.
No. It depends on who it is.
What does that mean?
Depends on whether I feel like, number one, depends on where I'm going and how quickly I need to get there.
Yep.
So which I usually am on the tube, so I'll do it.
Mm.
If it's a family and they're pulling the pushchair up the stairs. I mean, I was talking to one of my cousins about this the other day. And I was like, you know, if I'm walking and I see like a family and they're pulling the chair up and they're struggling, I've also got to remember what my position is. I can't go in there, and I don't like the idea of somebody swooping in to help.
Okay.
Especially if I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know what, I feel like they can do what they need to do. Sometimes some people need that, but then also sweeping in to act like, oh my god, I can come and do this for you. I can come and bring this up the stairs for you. I can do it for you.
It's not even like
but
that.
But if it's that's slightly different. I don't know. I have to weigh up the situation. I'm not gonna. Yeah. I can't apply it to every single situation. I just feel like
I get
that's how you kind of lead yourself into so many different.
So now I'm curious to ask you now, because obviously this poem is easily related to kind of like social movements and stuff where, you know, if one of us isn't free, none of us are free.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So how do you feel about that then?
If one of us isn't free, none of us are free.
Yeah. How do you feel about, you know, social movements that really put emphasis on absolutely everybody? You know, one person cannot be left behind, because that means that, you know.
Can you give me an example of a social movement that does that, just so that I've got context?
Okay, so the, you know, a lot of Black Power movements back in the day had that philosophy. I'm pretty sure I see a lot of people now, a lot of activists now, who are basically, I mean, especially like Black movements now, who are basically like, for too long we've kind of not been regarded in the LGBTQ plus community. So now if they're not free, we're not free either. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Where do you stand on that then? Not specific to that example.
I do think that, you know, like everybody is entitled to their freedom, and I'm very positive of the fact that that will come. But everybody has a role to play in that, whether it means that you are fighting from the inside, whether it means you're fighting from the outside, whether it means that you're making plans to change something here, there, or whatever. Everybody needs to rally together and do those things, but it's not about explicity. Do you see what I mean?
What do you mean?
It's not about saying, oh right, because ego would have to go completely. Ego would have to go completely. So therefore you have to be like, well, I'm doing this on the ground, I'm doing this and the other, what are you doing? You don't want all of us to be free because you're not doing what I'm doing. That's where I kind of become quite wary of certain of movements, because it's like it's a constant comparison as to, well, I'm doing this, therefore you're not doing that, so therefore you're not, you don't have the same kind of values as I do. But then that person could be really trying to change things in the way that they can, And I think that each person is trying to change things in the way that they can possibly, they can physically do it, mentally do it, emotionally do it. Do you see what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
And everybody, so that's where I stand on those kind of movements. And I feel like nobody is going to be the same. No one's going to give it the same kind of energy. There are some people that are just, that their purpose in life is to be the leader of those movements. And that's what, and that's what they're there to do. They're there to rally up the people to do so. But there's other people who are supposed to be there sending the tweets, or are supposed to be there talking to officials or whatever. They're supposed to, everybody plays their part. So I do definitely think that everybody's that freedom is for everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, you do have to fight for freedom for everybody in order for there to be a certain level of peace.
Yeah, okay.
But you have to remember that your, where your position is and what everybody else's position is. You cannot look for uniformity sometimes.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Yeah,
I get that. At the end of the day, look, when I'm on the train and someone gives their seat up to somebody else, I'm kind of like, oh shit, I feel embarrassed. Like, I should have got up.
But why? Why do you feel embarrassed? What is that level of shame that is being, and unless the person is infirm, or I'm sitting
in, that's what I mean.
Or I'm sitting in the seat, which is allocated for those infirm, or if it's a family and I feel like there's
a little child,
you say little black child.
I was about to say a little black boy. It's because in my mind I was thinking of a little black boy. Yeah, that's yesterday.
Just what I'm saying, but like if it's if it's those kind of situations, then you have to, you make the choice. You figure out what that choice is. And 9 times out of 10, someone's gonna say no, don't worry. But if you sit there and you make the choice, you make the judgment. You know, sometimes I'm tired too. Like, sometimes I'm physically tired too, so therefore, what must I do? I must get up because...
I feel like you're too calculated in your altruism, Alex.
It's not even that. It's not even that. Like, I just, I will sit down. Like, sometimes I'm literally like, if I feel like I can stand up for the length of the journey that I'm supposed to be going, then I will stand up and do so.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? And sometimes if I feel tired, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to be tired, and I'm going to look, and I'm going to face front, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. If I need to sit down and read the book, if I'm in a passage in a book, and my concentration cannot be broken, I'm not going to be looking around to see who's coming to do whatever I need to do, because I need to focus on what.
Well, you should be. You should be looking around, because there might be someone who really needs the seat, and you're stuck
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. This is what I'm saying. If I'm in the end seat, you know, in the tube they got the end seat.
Yeah, but even if you're not in the end seat,
but if I'm in the middle, and I'm literally like, and I'm sitting down in the seat. Yeah. That's my right as a person who's paying for the TFL to sit in that seat. So.
It is your right. I'm not saying anyway.
Yeah, but like,
we all know how Alex is.
But you're not saying what?
I do see what you're saying, but you know, it's just a bit.
But what? I can't be everywhere for everybody.
I know, but we should try.
I need to. Why?
Why not?
Because you will get exhausted if you're trying to be everywhere for everyone.
I mean,
you're looking up at everybody and thinking, oh, is that person? Sometimes I need to read this book.
Yeah.
To come and do this show, to talk about it.
I know, I get it. But I just see
to write this review. Do you see what I mean?
I guess maybe because it's very, very easy for me to see the importance in other people's lives and their well-being and stuff. So,
but then that's what I mean. So it's like, that's fine, and that's a great thing to do, at the expense of your own well-being.
Yeah,
that's when it becomes destructive. There needs to be balance. Because I can do it. And I have done it. It's like I would, you know what I mean? I have done it.
I get what you're saying. I think I'm just kind of, okay, fair enough.
You know what I mean? But do get up for people that can't physically stand up, guys. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying there are days when, you know, my back is hurting or my leg hurts or I'm tired and I want to sit down.
Yeah.
If I have to stand, I'll stand.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, cool. Anyway, so yes, those have been the two poems.
No, do you have any more questions on that one?
No, I have no more questions, mate. I mean, your whole seat should be all kind of, it's weakened me. I'm not going to lie to you. yes. Ozymandias and Meditation 17 or No Man Is an Island. Read them. They're really, really good. Read them. Let us know what you think. I really want to know what people think about these two poems because I hold them both very dear to my heart. I've got one tattooed on my arm and that. So
yeah. Also, I want to hear what your guys' views are on personal responsibility.
Yeah, me too, actually.
As well.
Yeah,
mine obviously fluctuates depending on where I am. I can say all of this now.
On the mood you're in. Yes,
yeah,
fine.
I can say all of this now. I won't get up. I won't do this. Blah blah blah. Yeah. But if I'm sitting on a tube and I feel my spirit tells me to get up, I'm gonna get up for somebody. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, I'm coming to do U-turn.
I know. It's just like it is what it is. Like no one is consistent.
No one's
consistent. But at this moment in time, where my back is actually hurting, I'm sitting down. Right. So I'm gonna be like, But yeah, let us know what those about those poems, guys.
So moving on to mostly flicks.
Oh God, yeah.
And this was one of my all-time favorite rom-coms. I guess you could call it a rom-com, kind of. Movie of all time. It is...
Show me the money.
Jerry
Show
Maguire. Me the money. Show me the money.
Dead.
I love that movie. What did you think?
So I don't like Tom Cruise at all.
Goodness.
I don't like him at all.
Right.
I think he looks just... I think he looks weird. I think there's something odd about him and his stature. I mean, I just think he's a strange man.
I said, did you like the movie?
I'm going through it. Like, okay. I'm going through the movie. So, I mean, but Tom Cruise, I think, yeah. So the movie, I don't know, man. It was a really interesting movie about how when you put your morals ahead of your career, how that can kind of like, you know, in the society that we live in, can kind of be a detriment to your whole frame of mind.
Yeah.
And
your career. It could end you. It nearly ended him.
So long story short, he's a sports agent. If you've not seen it, he's a sports agent. Found out that they were more about the money than the clients. And then Jerry Maguire wrote a manifesto for his...
It's a mission statement.
Mission statement. for his company. Told everybody. Everybody agreed. But then he ended up like losing his job. And this is the story of... how he survived thereafter, yeah. Essentially.
It's a story about relationships, about love.
I thought that was the myth, because when I was like, this is moving very quickly.
Like, what, his relationship with...
No, not that. Like, at the very big, like, you know, he's a sports guy,
Yeah.
Then he realized, like, all of that happens in, like, the first 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is moving very quickly, so what is the main story?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm not going to lie, Tom Cruise's character in there, I didn't find it that convincing. I didn't find his relationship with the little boy convincing.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. I don't know why. I love the little boy. He's so cute.
He was in Stuart Little.
Yeah, he's the cutest little boy. But I didn't find their relationship convincing. The person I found most convincing in that movie was Cuba Gooding Jr. Like,
he won an Oscar for that, didn't he?
Yeah, of course. He had to have, because he's so good in that movie. He's just so annoying. And then you're just kind of like, you feel sorry for him. And then you love, then you're so happy for him at the end. And then his relationship with Jerry, I like that. But I could tell that he loved Jerry. I couldn't tell that Jerry loved him. I couldn't tell.
But I think it was hard for Jerry to love anybody, wasn't it? Because he, like, even when he was in love with what's her name? Dorothy.
Yeah.
When he was in love with Dorothy,
even when he came back doing I'm looking for my wife. Bruv, I don't even know if he loved her. I don't know if he was in love with her.
Actually, yeah, it wasn't convincing. And
unconvincing.
That's just him as an actor then, isn't it? He's not a very convincing actor, really.
But he was unconvincing as how he acted it out. But also, his character, I don't know whether his character would have known whether he loved Dorothy or not.
You don't think he would have?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know. Good film. I think that...
I loved it. There were some moments where I got chills, man.
Like what?
Well, obviously the end. I got chills at the end.
Mm.
I got chills when Cuba Gooding Jr. got the $11.4 million deal and then he starts crying. Got chills that moment. I got chills when he...
I think Cuba Gooding Jr. cries in every film that he's in.
Is it? He doesn't cry in As Good As It Gets.
I've not seen that, actually.
You haven't seen As Good As It Gets?
No.
Oh, my God, Alex. We're going to do mostly flicks on As Good As It Gets.
Okay.
It's so fucking good.
I haven't seen that, but I know that he cries in The Fight and Temptation.
I ain't seen that shit. I haven't seen it. Who's in that again? Shit.
Angie Stone. Montel Jordan.
Oh, is it? I heard there was some other actor in there.
Yeah.
She can't act, though.
Mm.
But we shall not say her name.
Man of my business. I ain't trying to unleash any of them. But yeah, like I feel like he does cry in nearly all the films he's in. But yeah, I think, and like Regina King's in everything. As all these.
I love Regina. She was good in that.
She was.
She was good in
as a like. She's always a secondary character, and it's just like.
Yeah.
So Julia just pops up out of nowhere and it's like, oh, it's Regina King.
True, yeah, she is like a secondary character.
And it's, but I found it weird. What I found strange, didn't you feel kind of weird watching it and knowing it was 1996 that the film was made?
No, that didn't cross my mind.
It didn't cross your mind because I felt like, I felt like the way Dorothy was acting, and she was a 26 year old. She was supposed to be a 26 year old in that film.
Yeah.
And I don't think any 26-year-olds act like that nowadays.
Act like what?
Like the way that she was acting
like
was...
Like man-hungry.
Not man... She wasn't acting man-hungry.
She was acting man-hungry.
No, she wasn't.
Alex, she was acting man-hungry.
Okay.
Come on. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, we're all hungry for each other.
I'm trying to think. I felt like she was like so invested in this job, like for some reason I felt like she was older than she was supposed to be.
Probably had to grow up fast because she had a child quite young. You know,
and what, how old is he, five
something? Child was like five, which means she had him when she was 21.
So I just felt like I don't know.
I know what you mean, but yeah, I found her quite convincing. Actually, I liked her character,
but watching a lot of shows lately, like was set in the 90s.
Yeah,
do you ever feel like you could have just like fully embraced the 90s being the age that we're at? Do you think that would have been a fun time?
Yeah, oh yeah.
To do?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, there was
the 90s would have been banging.
There's a certain level of simplicity.
And everyone just shagging and stuff.
Right, okay.
Yeah. They were, come on.
But like that's the thing, they still are now, to be honest. But I feel
But it's a lot more complicated these days.
Yeah, it is a lot more complicated. But then also, I think that... there was just a little sort of simplicity in the style, simplicity in the mindset. There were just little things that just were kind of like, they had their negatives, but I don't know. When I was watching things like Jerry Maguire and seeing just how, you know, like, I don't know.
Easy going things were.
Yeah, considering I was five when it was made, when it came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I felt like, I enjoyed the film.
I'm glad you did.
I enjoyed the film, and it ends up being a very corny love story.
The whole
you had me at hello.
I think that's only corny because it's literally ingrained in pop culture now. Do you know what I mean?
Just shut up. I'm like, oh god, come on now.
Oh god,
it's like what's that Dustin Hoffman film?
Which one? Rain Man.
It's not Rain Man. Marathon Man.
I've never seen that.
And he's like, what's it? I don't know what her name is, but I think it's like Elaine. And he's like, he disrupts her wedding.
No, I've
never seen it.
I've never seen it. No.
You need to watch Marathon Man, I think. I think it's Marathon Man.
People love shouting women's names, innit?
Yeah, but like, it was just like, there's something about 80s and 90s films that were just kind of like very weird scripted situations that were going on. He was shouting Elaine for a good minute on the film.
Yeah.
And I was like, this didn't need to happen. You can actually stop.
Let me write that down. I'm going to watch that.
I think it was Elaine. Let me know if I'm wrong, guys, but I think that it was.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think I watched it the other day. But otherwise...
Anyway.
So, yes.
Come to the end of the show.
Come to the end of the road.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Yes. Do you have anything that you want to shout out about this week?
Yes, I just want to say, if you are suffering in silence with, mental health issues, or you feel like there's just something a bit... off with how you feel, talk to somebody, chat to someone. Do you know what I mean?
Most definitely.
Like, don't suffer in silence. It's not worth it. There are actually some people who care, and I know it's hard to actually believe that people care. I struggle every day to believe that people who are reaching out to me really give a shit. It's hard, but speaking is better. Or tweet about it, or write in a diary. Don't feel embarrassed, because personally, I feel like if people don't see that you're suffering, they'll treat you like you're absolutely normal. And I don't think that people should do that. If I've got a broken leg, if I've got a wound, you're not going to prod it. But because people can't see mental health issues, you know what I mean? This is why sometimes with the cuts that I have, I look at them and it just reminds me that I'm really fucking suffering.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like my pain made visual. Do you understand?
I would say be careful with what you share online as well. Just be careful, because a lot of things, it's a weird, if we're coming back to the topic of personal responsibility and stuff like that, you do not know who you're triggering. Do not know what you're triggering. You don't know who's done what or whatever. But also, it's always good to find somebody or to find something to confide in. And I know there's a kind of security, a kind of like comfort of sharing with quote unquote strangers on the internet.
Yeah.
Which is something that as a generation, we tend to do a lot.
Yeah.
But also, I would just say, just be mindful of like what you're sharing and how you're sharing it.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, like there's a lot of people, they do have people in, if you don't have anybody in your life that you can share these things with, it's always difficult to be able to share,
of course,
things with people.
I do find that with, when I say like, you know, you can tweet about it and stuff, one, because it is a form of release. At least it is for me when I tweet about certain things, how I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes there are nice people who will reach out to you and talk to you and they will genuinely try to help you. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like that's important. And also don't forget, there are helplines you can call. You can call Samaritans on 0208-368-6789. And that's a suicide hotline. You can talk to people. They're very nice, very friendly, and it's absolutely confidential. So please don't suffer in silence.
Yeah, don't suffer in silence at all. Just make sure that you're actually having conversations with people.
In it, chat to the man them, chat to the gal them.
Talk to people that you know that you can trust. And like make sure that, you know, if you can, obviously this is economic depending, but if you can get into therapy, I would suggest it like 100%. Just because,
you know, man, just do whatever it takes, innit?
You got to do whatever it takes to get yourself right. Your friends aren't going to prod you in the same way a therapist will. Neither will your family. So make sure that you, like, if you just, you've got all the options are there. Just make sure you're taking it. And if you're a Black, Asian, or minority ethnic, there's the Black and Asian Therapy Network.
Oh, yes, fantastic.
Which you can go to, is the BATN.
Yeah.
.co.uk or .org.uk, one of the two. So make sure you can go there and you can actually, you know, if you want to, for someone that looks like you or someone that like wants to talk to you about certain issues that are specific to culture, they are great.
Yep. That's where I found my therapist.
And mine too. So
cool.
Yes.
That's been our final thought, guys.
All right.
Join us next time on Mostly Lit.
Yeah.
See ya. Get lit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.